You're listening to SA Talk, San Antonio's favorite podcast for discussions involving the Alamo City. I'm your host and favorite retirement advisor, Zachary Espericueta. Today's Friday, October 1st, and this week I have Kim Beechner, CEO and founder of Embark Marketing, joining me on the podcast. We'll be talking about the restaurant industry, marketing trends, how it handled the pandemic, and the outlook for the future. Prior to opening a marketing agency of her own, Kim spent 8 years working in the service industry, and while doing so, served in pretty much every imaginable role in that industry. This experience, combined with her educational background in international business, marketing, communications, as well as a lot of traveling, inspired her agency's niche. Over the last 11 years, Kim has cultivated one of the restaurant industry's premier marketing agencies, providing entrepreneurs, small business owners, and chefs an opportunity to grow their concepts in a way that stays true to their intentions. Kim has a BBA in International Business and Marketing from the University of the Incarnate Word, as well as an MA in Communication from UIW. So without further delay, here's my conversation with Kim Beechner. I appreciate you joining me on the podcast. It's great to have you here on SA Talk. I'm curious, Kim, how did you kind of get into the food and beverage industry? What led you down this career path?
Honestly, the food and beverage industry kind of saved my life. I was born and raised here in San Antonio, and I grew up on the south side, and then I moved to the north side and went to Marshall High School. And unfortunately, when I was 16, my mom passed away unexpectedly. So I started working in the restaurant industry because the restaurant industry was the only place I could go where I could earn decent money at 16. And have the opportunity to make tips where I could use my sparkling personality to try and make some more money to survive. So
that's always been interesting to me, just because I feel like people that work in the restaurant industry, especially if you're like a server, a waiter, waitress, you just work so much harder. Like, so I have no experience working in the restaurant industry. When I was in high school and in college, my job that I had, my high school job, my college job, I was working at Academy Sports and Outdoors. So I only worked retail. You know, that's the only experience I had. And
you have a customer service experience then.
Yeah, it's definitely customer service experience. And that was something that they always talked about there at Academy. But I just feel like when I watch a waitress or a waiter, man, they are on the ball all the time, like having to check on their tables, having to go back to get orders, carrying out food. I remember, and maybe this is just me and my buddies there at Academy, but sometimes we had a lot of downtime just to kind of hang around and do nothing. But I feel like in the food and beverage industry, that's not a thing.
It is and it isn't. The restaurant industry kind of does this like curve where you have these pops of a lot of people and then a dip where it gets a little slower so you have time to breathe. But yeah, when it's busy, you are constantly moving. You are on your feet for 8 hours a day. You, whether you're having a bad day or not, you put on the smile and you play the game. And I feel like restaurant industry people are super resilient. They are hardworking group of people, a really supportive community of each other. And that was where I kind of found my home after spending time working in restaurants in every different position, from dishwasher to busser. I used to make onion rings at Longhorn Cafe, cashier. I worked every position, right, in the restaurant industry. And then when I turned 18, I decided that I wanted to move to a bar position or work in a high-end restaurant, because I knew that if I had higher ticket sales, then I could make more tips. And ultimately, it was about survival for me. And this was a great way to survive, have fun while I was doing it, be around really nice, interesting people. And when you're a server or a bartender, you get to meet all different kinds of people. So I had this opportunity to make connections and kind of schmooze in a way that I hadn't had the opportunity before. What really drew me to this industry was a lot of the places that I worked for were independent restaurants that were owned by families or owned by a single chef or a single entrepreneur who had gone through all of these struggles to try and build their business. And hearing their stories and watching them do their thing was so fascinating. And coming from a family of entrepreneurs, I was like, man, I want to do that. But running a restaurant is so hard that I knew that I didn't necessarily want to own a restaurant, but I knew I wanted to stay in the industry and help this industry. So in senior year of undergrad, I took an internship with a law firm and I helped him do marketing. And he was like, you're doing, you know, you're pretty good at this. You should start a company. He helped me. We did a trade where I helped him with marketing services and he in return helped me to create my company, my LLC. So in senior year of undergrad, I started this business. At the time, I was trying to help basically anybody who would hire me. But about a year into it, I realized that because while I'm running the business, I'm still bartending and working service jobs, trying to fund my own company. Forever, I will be indebted to this industry because it has helped me survive so many ups and downs of my life.
So that was kind of the beginning of Embark Marketing, or was that a different marketing company at the time?
It was Embark Marketing. I thought I was going to do bar marketing specifically. And then I realized after doing a lot of traveling around the world that I really wanted to study food and how different cultures and food impact experiences and bring people together. So I narrowed my niche to specifically restaurant industry because I was doing like marketing for dental companies and like construction and AC. And I was just like, this is not fun.
Like you had to narrow it down. Yeah. It's kind of hard not to fall in love with the food industry.
Of course. Yeah.
It can be a little dangerous sometimes, but
yeah. But yeah. Well, why not? And like I said, the people are awesome.
So the question I guess I have, Kim, is how is restaurant marketing and PR that you do for the food and beverage industry, how is that different from retail marketing and retail PR?
So from an educational perspective, having studied international business and marketing and communications, I think that the baseline of marketing is the same probably across the board, whether you're implementing PR or social media or advertising or digital marketing. But what's different for the restaurant industry is the way in which we apply it. So I used to manage a restaurant and I'd have marketing people come in all the time trying to sell me certain things. And I understood the base of what they were trying to sell me, the technology, whatever, because I had been going to school for that. But it was the application, really capturing the essence of the restaurant industry that I felt like they were missing. And because I had this unique experience of actually being in it and having the cultural traveling experiences and exploring different cultures and cuisines, I saw it from a different way than I feel like the average marketing person did. So what I tried to do is make that marketing experience more organic, meaning I wanted to show people what it was like to eat the food, be in the restaurant, what's in the food, what makes it so special, who is the chef behind it that's working his butt off that you don't even see or appreciate. And I think taking that deeper dive into the industry is what set us apart. And as soon as we did that, and I was able to identify this kind of symbiotic relationship between the restaurant side and the marketing side, we saw a lot more success. And I was able to help a lot more of these community members that I wanted to help in a way that I didn't know exactly how or that it was even possible, but it just kind of came together in a really symbiotic way.
I guess I'm curious because I know with a lot of small businesses, and I don't know, do you just work with larger businesses? Do you work with some small businesses?
Most of our clients are independently owned restaurants. However, we do have quite a few franchises that we work with, but most of those franchises are individuals who started out with one and then two and then three and then more and more came. So they come from humble beginnings, in which case I would consider them small businesses, you know?
I guess I'm curious to know, because I know with a lot of small businesses, they have to be very frugal with their money and especially their marketing money. You know, we've kind of fallen into this, I wouldn't necessarily call it a trap, but we've turned to social media as kind of like, all right, look, it's free marketing. We're just going to go on social media. We're going to post pictures of whatever we're doing at our small businesses, whether it's food, whether it's a shop. And that's what we're going to rely on because it's free. And again, as entrepreneurs, you know, we have to be frugal and we can't be spending left and right. And so that's kind of what we've fallen into. It's like a trap, I guess you could say, of just posting on social media. So why would you say that a small business or a restaurant or bar in this case would need some kind of marketing strategy to grow?
So I think a great example of that is the pandemic. The restaurant industry does have limited resources. Small independent restaurants don't typically have the budget to hire an in-house marketing person. And for someone with the type of knowledge that you need to strategize and implement a marketing strategy effectively can be very costly. So many of these restaurants can't afford to hire someone in-house to do those things for them. So the way I tried to position Embark Marketing was someone that you could bring in third party that understood your needs and your operations and could provide not only strategy and consulting for marketing. Oftentimes I find that I'm strategizing their operations as well because I have operational experience. But what I try to do is show them that they have a lot going on operationally. They're constantly dealing with inventory and turnover and having to fill those positions themselves when they can't find somebody, in which case I kind of take all of those marketing tasks off their plate and put them onto ours. But what I explain is that not only are we going to do them, but we're going to do them better than perhaps somebody in-house could do them because we have the educational background in marketing technology. So a lot of what we do is look at analytical data, study algorithms, study content engagement and performance, and identify certain trends that work for that specific restaurant, and then try to apply those trends and those unique areas that are popular to their brand. Which is something that I feel like a lot of restaurateurs that I've come in contact with, they haven't even thought about that. They're so focused on operations, they don't have the mental capacity to focus on marketing their business. And to be honest, in the restaurant industry, most restaurants don't make it past 2 years. Historically, businesses to make it past 2 years is really exceptional. And my goal is that they should all make it past 2 years, you know? But in order to do that, we have to implement some strategy.
And you know what I've found a little, I guess, intriguing is there are some restaurant owners who, and I don't know if this is like their ultimate plan or if this is just something they like, maybe they realize some kind of trend. I don't know. I've seen it to where some restaurant and bar owners, they open up an establishment and they just, for whatever reason, they just want to have it open for like 10 years, maybe even less, and then close down and go open up a new kind of restaurant or a new bar. And I don't know if that was a plan to do that. Like, okay, we're going to ride this wave, this trend for 5, 6, 7 years, close down and then ride the new trend. And then that's what they're going to do. Or if it's something like, well, we're trying something out. It failed. It's not going the way it wanted to. So I'm going to try something different.
I think all of those are definite possibilities. I've seen some clients that open up restaurants, and there is the food industry goes through ebb and flows of trends, things that are popular and not. Right now, we're going through a hot chicken phase. Like, hot chicken is super popular. Things like acai right now is also really popular. Like, the third largest food grossing product is acai, which you would never know. But now all of a sudden you see all these little places popping up, and that's why. Same thing with seafood. Since steak is increased, seafood has become more affordable. So we're seeing a lot more seafood restaurants. And I think that smart business people may hop on these trends of the food industry and ride that wave while it's viable. And then when they realize that that market is transitioning, hop off, which is very smart from a business perspective. But I don't think that that's always the case. I think more than likely, they're restaurateurs who have a passion to share a certain cuisine or their skill set with the community, and they open a restaurant and they wish and hope that it would last 10 years and sometimes they don't have the business strategy or they lack the marketing to survive things like a pandemic.
Well, and sometimes, like you said, I think it's smart and I think it's business savvy in some cases. And what makes me think that, what leads me to that conclusion that it can be business savvy in some cases, is that sometimes I see restaurants that have been around for many, many, many years, and they're just not in style anymore, you know, and so then it makes me think, like, you know, there's just some things, there's some trends that just die off or they go away. And so it's not always the best business idea to want to keep that restaurant around for 50 years. Maybe it is smart to just keep it around for 10, 15 years and then ride the next wave, you know, and move on to the next restaurant. It's not like as a business owner, it's seen as a failure. It's more of like, hey, well, you're moving on to the next restaurant. Like, okay, yeah, now you can say you've opened two restaurants. It's not that you failed with the first. You're moving on to the next, you know? Yeah. And I think of that when I think of places like my friends, if they're listening, they're going to laugh about this, but there's a place on the South Side and I don't want to say anything bad about them, but I do not prefer the food at Bud Jones, but that place has been around for so long, you know? And I'm sure when Bud Jones opened up, that was like,
the hot spot. Yeah.
Right. And there was a lot of places that, and I don't know if I wouldn't really consider it a diner, but you know, they have a lot of different kinds of food there at Bud Jones, which to me is a little strange, but like that was a thing. At one point where it's like, or same thing with like Luby's, right? Like you could get enchiladas and you can also get macaroni and cheese and you can also get a chicken fried steak and you can also get seafood. Like it's all these different things. And you're like, wait, that's kind of weird when you really think about it, that you can get all these different kinds of food, like pick one, right? And that's not as much a thing now as it was back then. And so I'm just wondering, like, was it a great idea to keep that place around for 50 years? You know, why not just kind of take your profits? Hey, we made it. All right, let's move on to the next industry. But I understand some of it's like family owned, right? And you want to keep it
for
in the family.
Sure. And I think that's part of it too, that I love family owned business that have been around forever. You know, we work with a lot of businesses that have been around for 20 plus years and their food is still phenomenal. For the ones that at least I am thinking of off the top of my head, the food is still great and that's why they're still around. But what I see with those older generation restaurants is that the clientele that they originally started out with is getting older. Perhaps part of their clientele is passed on, in which case, how do you refill that restaurant? In which case, for those family-owned restaurants, what I try to do is keep the essence of the brand, but transition the image a little bit or bring in a little younger voice to try and bring in a new audience of people. So if you have someone who's owned a restaurant for 30, 40 years and they're in their 70s, you know, they don't want to change, but maybe when their kids take over, the next generation will implement these newer technology changes and put more emphasis on Instagram, which is where right now for the food industry, everything's being driven from. So
yeah, and that's why I kind of wanted to put it in our notes for the podcast is like restaurant marketing in the Instagram era, right? Like how different it is.
Let me tell you, when I first started my business, I mean, I was like the MySpace era and AOL chats, and then we got Facebook. And I was doing restaurant marketing using Facebook friend pages because they didn't have business pages yet. And having to keep up over the last 11 years with the transitions in technology and social media platforms from Facebook to Facebook Business, then Snapchat came around for a hot second where it's like, should we be using Snapchat? And then to Instagram, and now we have Twitter and TikTok and Periscope and all these other different apps. In the beginning, there was a lot of experimentation with like what platforms really drive traffic, and YouTube. I forgot about YouTube. God, there's so many. But Instagram has really, I think, exploded food culture because it's such a visual platform and food is so visual.
Well, that's why I think it's important that a business, if they have the marketing dollars, right, if they have the budget to do it, that they hire a professional and a professional, you know, agency to handle their marketing, their social media, their PR, because they're so busy, like you said, with the operational aspect of running the business that it's hard to keep up with market trends and what's the best way to get your name and visuals out there. I mean, I'm just picturing the amount. I mean, I can't even imagine the amount of small businesses, you know, in the early 2000s, mid 2000s, late 2000s, that when social media was kind of catching on, and I'm sure some of them were thinking like, ah, we don't need a website. We don't need a social media, you know, Facebook. No, that's for friends. You know, that's kind of like MySpace. Like, I could just picture the thousands of, probably tens of thousands or more of businesses, hundreds of thousands of businesses that were just like putting that off to the side. Like, we don't need social media. And then years before that, we don't need a website, right? Like all these different things because they didn't see the value in it, which is not their fault. But that's not their expertise. Their expertise is making food, right? Running a business, right. Hiring. That's their expertise. Their expertise is not realizing the trends and understanding what they need to do to market themselves. That's where someone like Embark can come in.
Yeah. Well, that's when I first started the business, it was hard finding restaurant clients and convincing them to invest in social media marketing because it was so new. I do feel like it was a challenge for me in starting my business and trying to get people to understand that. But I was fortunate enough to come across a few restaurateurs that were more business savvy and saw the potential of social media and were willing to invest in me exploring the different options and avenues that we could pursue with that. And since then, obviously, social media has turned out to be like one of our most consuming media platforms. But where I think restaurants are making mistakes still today is that they think that they can just post and that's enough. And unfortunately, Facebook and Instagram, they're businesses, just like Google, just like everything else. And they need to make money. And in order for them to make money, they need you to buy ads. We are just a pawn in their game, essentially. I am playing a game with the social media platforms on behalf of restaurant industries. And I think that entrepreneurs, all business owners, don't understand in depthly how much the algorithm and content and strategy goes into social media to actually make it effective and worth your dollars. Posting is just not enough anymore, unfortunately. And that's not because the marketing person says so. It's because that's the way Facebook and Instagram have set up their infrastructure. And we have to abide by that if we want to capitalize on the benefits of social media.
One of the food trends that I don't like when it comes to social media, well, I should say there's two trends that I don't like on social media when it comes to the food and beverage industry. One is, for whatever reason, and I honestly think some of it has kind of died off. It's not as popular anymore, at least in my feed. But it's the experimentation, like the experimental, like, oh, I'm going to make this burger and I'm going to use two donuts as the burger, but I'm also going to put sprinkles on top of the donut. And then I'm also going to stick like a chicken breast in there. But there's also going to be like an enchilada on top of that. Like, I'm going to put all these things together and then I'm going to douse it with cheese, right? And then I'm going to take a picture of that. And then everyone comments with the fire emojis. Oh my God, this looks amazing because it looks crazy. And it's like, some of those things look okay. And some of it's like, oh, okay, I would try that, right? Like, for instance, you know, Gordo's up in Austin, and, you know, rest in peace to the San Antonio Gordo's. But, you know, they had a donut burger, but the donuts themselves, they were not glazed. I guess I think you could get them glazed, but they weren't glazed. They were just the donut bread, right? I mean, it wasn't like crazy. And it was actually good because it's really just bread like you would eat with a regular burger. But some of these pictures are just outrageous. And they're just, you know, it's just a disgusting mixture. And it's honestly just to get the Instagram likes. And that's like I said, as far as my feed goes, it's pretty much died off. But every once in a while, I come across like a picture. And honestly, at this point in time, I think people are just roasting it. You know, it's just a picture of just some crazy mixture of food. And it's like, that doesn't even look good. Yeah. And people are just doing it for the likes and Instagram. The other thing I don't like is, and I think this is also like an issue with people too, not just businesses, but you know, everyone talks about how on Instagram or social media in general, you can make yourself look different. Mm-hmm. And you're basically lying to a lot of people in the way you look. And it's
same with food.
Yeah. Same with food. Right. And you can make a place look really good, you know, aesthetically. And then you show up and you're like, what? This is not how it looked like in pictures. Those are the two things. Those are the two things that I do not like, is how it's mainly Instagram, but just in general, yeah. Social media is being used in the restaurant industry. So my question to you then, Kim, and I don't, I don't want to touch on COVID trends because we're going to get to that here in a bit. But what are some trends that you've kind of liked or disliked?
So the novelty aspect, which is what I would consider those crazy concoctions that you're seeing, they are instantly viral, in which case they benefit social media wise for the likes and for the engagement, of course. But I feel like you shouldn't be putting out novelty items unless you know for sure they taste good, because inevitably those novelty items do go a little viral. You do get a lot of likes, and inevitably people do come to your restaurant or food truck per se to try it. And if they show up, you better show out. Like, that's what it comes down to. And that is goes the same for these, you know, people who portray the restaurant one way on social media, and then you come in and you have a totally different experience. And that's something that we discuss with our clients as soon as they come on board, is like, look, I can bring you the people, but if your customer service and the quality of food isn't up to par, you're never going to retain those customers. In fact, I actually read through restaurants' reviews before we even accept them as a client, so that I already am aware of some of those things to be like, hey, Joe over here isn't a very good server. Does Joe still work here? Because he gets a lot of complaints. Because those are things that I think they're not looking at, because again, they're focused on operations. As far as what I don't like about food on social media, I love everything about food on social media. No, I lie. The mukbang thing. That was kind of popular on Instagram and YouTube. Mukbangs, which is like watching people eat food. Yeah, it's a thing. Not really my thing. I think it's kind of gross. But food has brought us some really weird social media content.
Yeah. Well, one of the trends I do like, this isn't really social media, even though I'm sure they use social media, is like the food truck, coffee truck kind of thing. I mean, I would consider it a trend, just because 10 years ago, I don't remember too much of that being around.
He called the Roach Coaches. Do you remember that?
I don't. Oh, I don't remember that. So, I can't remember a single, and I'm really trying to think. Not that I was like some big foodie. I'm still not any kind of foodie, but I was never any kind of foodie. I've been here all my life, but I just don't remember any food trucks or coffee trucks or anything like that up until about 5 or so years ago, starting to trickle in, and now it's like they're everywhere, which is great. Honestly, a lot of them are tremendous, but it's just, to me, I mean, it's grown so much.
Food trucks, I feel like, had the image of being gross because it was small and contained. And I mean, probably the closest thing for me to a food truck was living on the South Side, and the ice cream truck rolling through my neighborhood was like the closest thing to a food truck I'd ever seen. But in the last 5 years, yes, food trucks have expanded and grown, which I think is great. I don't know. I would have to do more research on this. I don't know if that's a permit thing, like the city has opened up permits to, or the health department has opened up permits to allow people to operate out of trucks, which maybe that's why we saw that explosion of entrepreneurs going that route. But I think food trucks have been a great Kickstarter point for chefs and entrepreneurs who want to share their food with people, but don't have the capital to buy a brick and mortar or the capital to hire a whole crew of staff to run the restaurant. In which case, a food truck is a great beta test to see if your concept's going to work. And what I've noticed, I mean, we have a food truck client that has 25 food trucks across Texas and the United States now. I mean, they started out as one food truck in Houston, and now they have tons of them, but they're efficient, they're affordable. As long as the food and the customer service at the truck is good, the truck will work, you know? It's keeping up that expectation that you would get at a regular restaurant, I think, is what's made the food truck successful. They've really proven, like, just because it's not a sit-down meal doesn't mean it's not going to be a great experience. And then we have things like the food truck parks, like the block that have opened up, that have made it an even more communal experience, because there's tables and a DJ and a bar, and you can have more fun and get to try 5 or 6 different types of food from different food trucks. Like, that, to me, that's my like favorite kind of way to spend the night. Trying like tons of different food, drinking beer, and sitting outside. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like I said, I love that trend. I think it's still going on, right? And that's one of my things. I wouldn't necessarily say it's on my bucket list, but I have to say that is one thing that I would love to do in the future, if it is still a thing, right? Hopefully it doesn't die out, is, I don't know, open up like a little coffee truck. Like, I feel like that's so cool. But, you know, speaking of trends,
ready to work it.
No. It wouldn't be a side job. Like, it would have to be like my
full-time hustle.
Exactly. But, you know, speaking of trends, we saw some newer trends kind of come up because of COVID, and COVID had such a negative impact on service workers and the restaurant, the food and beverage industry. But we did see some trends kind of come out of it. So kind of speak to that negative impact and, you know, what you saw maybe with your clients or just in general, maybe from friends or old colleagues that you had in the restaurant industry. What did you kind of see? How did COVID affect that business?
It was quite devastating and sad, not just for COVID and the way it affected our clients, but because I've been in the service industry for 15, 20 years now, and we are a tight-knit community, I feel like I've touched so many service industry people in San Antonio over the last 15 years, and watching them lose their jobs and restaurants that were entrepreneur-owned or chef-owned who didn't have the same kind of financial backing that a huge corporation may have quickly went under. And even some of our franchises, you know, were contemplating selling their franchises because people weren't dining in. So it was definitely devastating. When COVID first hit, a lot of our clients shut down, obviously, because we had to. And about half of our restaurants didn't ever reopen, which was incredibly sad, not just because we lost those restaurants in our community, but those people lost their livelihood. And so for the restaurants that did stay, that we did keep and decided to reopen after the closure, my biggest thing was I wanted to come up with pivots that could develop new revenue streams for these businesses because I wanted them to survive. And their survival directly impacted my survival and even my employees' survival, because without them, I couldn't pay my employees. So it was to lift us all up. We were in it together, even though technically we're in the marketing industry and technically they're in the restaurant industry if we're really looking at it like that, but it's symbiotic. And so I spent a lot of time researching Texas Restaurant Association and looking up what are the legal changes that are happening in Texas, looking up the legal changes that were happening in larger metropolitan cities like New York City and LA and Chicago as indicators of what may trickle down to Texas, and trying to predict what is the next step that's going to happen here so that we could be ahead of the curve, if you will. So one of the first things that we started doing is setting up conference calls with every single client, emailing them sometimes daily, every time there was a new update about how COVID impacted the restaurant industry, and trying to start strategizing. So I did all this research and I started coming up with options. In some places, they were shutting down the insides, but at talking to their leases of their property, trying to get patio extensions by TABC law, as long as you had a connection from the building into the parking lot and permission, you could extend your TABC license. So some of this stuff was very operational, but I needed to help them figure out how to function operationally and then implement the marketing side, because if I just marketed it and people showed up and they weren't prepared for that, it was never going to work. So implementing things like curbside parking, extending their patios and their service areas to outdoor spaces. Some of them we started doing, they didn't even have websites or to go online ordering options because they didn't see the viability of investing in marketing to begin with. So it was like,
Of those things were going to, and I'm sure you being in the marketing industry and realizing those trends, those things were going to happen eventually, mm-hmm. right? It was just sped up.
Yes.
Because of what happened during the pandemic. You know, that is something that I think has carried on. Not that we're out of the pandemic, we're still in it, but as we hopefully get out of it and move forward, and as the years go on, I mean, some of those things I don't see going away, right? Like the alcohol to go, obviously, or the curbside, the online ordering. People, restaurants, especially larger ones, were doing the online ordering already, but now almost every restaurant does some kind of online ordering or to go or
family, you know,
curbside.
That was a big thing. I was like, look, you're a family, you're cooped up. You can't take your kids out. You can't go out to eat. Make family meals an option on your online ordering. A family for four can eat, you know, a thing of pasta with some salad and a loaf of bread. And having these ready-made meals wasn't, I feel like, a revenue stream that they had implemented things like catering before, but they had never marketed it as like, you don't have to cook. We can cook for you and you can pick up a family meal on your way home or have it directly delivered through DoorDash, which is something that they just hadn't thought of it like that yet.
Right.
And I think that'll stay. And I've even seen some really interesting post-pandemic concepts like ghost kitchens. We saw that trend with a lot of like Chili's, these big major franchise restaurants who weren't operating. They were running ghost kitchens through their kitchen under a different name. And then I started thinking, like, why can't
Real quick, for the listeners, explain what that is so they know.
Okay, so a ghost kitchen is a restaurant that doesn't physically exist. They have a website, they have a menu, an online ordering platform, but they don't have a physical location. Either they're making their food out of a commissary, which is like a community commercial kitchen, and then delivery drivers are picking it up and taking it to you. Or we had this other concept where restaurants who had staff that they wanted to keep on staff and they had a brick and mortar building, but they didn't have customers, were kind of like subletting their kitchen to other brands and allowing those brands to use the kitchen to make sales. And then in turn, they got a little piece of the pie. So it kind of helped everybody stay involved. Now we're seeing that continue here with like full on ghost kitchen concepts or food trucks that are running two businesses inside of one food truck. One's that's a ghost kitchen and one that's a regular kitchen, which is so cool. You know, but that's the beautiful thing about negative things like this, you know, from the economic crisis that happened in what, 2008, you know, and that the housing market crash came a lot of innovation. Every time we have something economically or globally impact us, like a pandemic, it sparks innovation, ingenuity, a new train of thinking, a new way of doing things. And for that, I feel lucky. There's a lot of positivity that came out of it. And I think for restaurants, it really opened their eyes to how essential and important it is to have digital presence, to have a website, to have social media, because without that, you cannot keep your consumers informed when things like a snowstorm hits and you can't open. Or a pandemic happens and we don't know if you're open or are you curbside or what's your policies. Like, how do you communicate those messages if you don't have a platform to communicate them on? So it was a big learning curve, I think, for our entire industry. And moving forward, I hope that we've learned from it and we won't make those mistakes again.
Well, have you seen the industry here in San Antonio change? You know, you've been here your whole life, right?
Yeah.
So you've seen it in kind of a similar perspective, I guess, to me, in the sense that you've been here your whole life, but you've been in the industry, which is different for me.
Yeah.
So how have you seen that change and what's kind of the outlook for the future here in San Antonio?
I think historically San Antonio has been underrepresented in the food category. I've always seen, after traveling so much, I noticed that San Antonio is like quite a few years behind some of the larger metropolitan cities and in a lot of areas, infrastructure and food as well. And I think that we are finally to this point because we have so many amazing culinary industry leaders right now that are paving the path for San Antonio, that we will see San Antonio exponentially grow in the restaurant industry sector. I think part of that is we have a lot of outsiders moving to Texas. They're bringing their own cultural perspective, their own food culture to us. And then we have, like I said, industry leaders. We've got, you know, Chef Luca, Tim McDermott, Chef Kirk, all of these, Cesar Zepeda, all of these chefs that are have recently been featured on Food Network and the Cooking Channel. And they're really showing that San Antonio has something to offer from our culinary scene, not just Mexican restaurants. We have a lot of other really cool concepts and really interesting people. And we're finally getting that notoriety as a city that I've never seen before. And so my outlook for us is super bright, even though we're going through one of the hardest times for our industry. I think that these people are really showing our culture and showing that we have something to offer. You don't have to go to Austin or Dallas or Houston. San Antonio is just as cool.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I think, you know, we are used to just having to catch up and play catch up with a lot of these cities. And in many aspects, we still play catch up. And we'll probably continue to for a while. But the important thing is, two important things there to say is that, number one, at least we are catching up, right? It'd be one thing if we're just kind of staying in place and we're not realizing that and growing in whatever industry it is. But number two, I think sometimes, you know, we're catching up faster than what we used to. And I think that's kind of going along with everything that you just mentioned, being recognized, being seen as, you know, having all these culinary experts here in San Antonio. So I definitely agree with you. I think the outlook is very bright here in San Antonio. Speaking of San Antonio, I always like to end the Essay Talk podcast and kind of ask the guest, what are some of your favorite places? And I'm interested to hear from you, Kim, because, of course, you're in the industry. So, you know, what are some of your favorite spots here in San Antonio?
I mean, I would love to shout out my clients, but I'd rather give the love to my these little hole in the walls that I love that I could never, ever actually market, but they're the best, like Thai Taste in Leon Valley. They're like a really small Thai restaurant in a strip center. Amazing food, must try. Same thing in Leon Valley. There's one called Kung Fu Noodle, like really amazing noodles. I'm on an Asian kick right now, but I also super love Mediterranean food. So Pasha is a little bit bigger, but they're one of my favorites. And one of our clients is a little food truck called Abu Omar Halal, and they have the most amazing shawarma.
Where is that at?
They have one off of UTSA and one in the medical center. But when I lived in Europe, that was like the thing to eat, like street food wise. And when I came to San Antonio, or when I came back home, I never could find anything like that. And so I actually stopped that restaurant forever because I wanted them to be my client so bad, because I was like, it is so good. Please let me have you.
Yeah. Well, I've been looking for a place that has some good chicken shawarma like that, because I know I spent a summer in Austin doing an entrepreneurship like class cohort thing. Anyways, they housed us on campus, and right there in Guadalupe, by one of the dorms,
it's Abu Omar Halal.
And they had Halal Bros.
Okay.
And oh my gosh, it was so good. Like, if I could have gotten it every day, and there were some days where I did get it back to back, and I probably shouldn't have, and it, you know, it burned a hole through my wallet, but it was so, so good. And when I came back to San Antonio after that summer, I was just like, where do I go? Where do I go for this?
This is the spot. I can vouch for it fully. Tastes just like I've had in other countries. And it's really hard to duplicate those cultural foods in the United States, because a lot of times they can't source the same ingredients. And this is the closest to sage I've ever had. This is great.
Well, Kim, it's been a pleasure speaking with you on the podcast. Before I let you go, be sure to plug in. Where can we find you? Where can we find Embark Marketing? Anything coming up that you want the listeners to know about? This is your time to plug in.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate your time today. If you want to learn more about Embark Marketing, you can visit www.embark-marketing.com. And we are on every social media platform, as we should be, at Embark Marketing.
Listeners, go follow them. Definitely give them a follow. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, everywhere you can find them. Go visit their website. If you're a business listening, you can definitely visit that website or get in touch with Kim. But again, Kim, I appreciate it so much. I had a great time talking to you about the food industry, something I am not well-versed in at all, but still have opinions on. So it was great speaking with you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
That wraps up my conversation with Kim Beechner, CEO of Embark Marketing. I'm going to take a quick break. I'll be back with our question of the week, as well as our local recommendation. And we have a new voice this week lending their recommendation. So stay tuned.
This is what we're made of. The businesses that line our streets and the customers that make them flourish. As a business owner, this is your community, your members, your regulars, your neighbors. Your business is unique. So are your customers. No matter who you need to reach, Spectrum Reach is here to help you connect with the right message on every screen. Visit SpectrumReach.com to connect with a local advertising expert. That's SpectrumReach.com.
Welcome back into SA Talk. I want to say thank you again to Kim for joining me on the SA Talk podcast. I'm so glad we had the opportunity to have this conversation on SA Talk because it has to do with small businesses. Yes, she assists some franchisees and other entities that some may call larger businesses, or at least consider larger businesses, but she also helps the small business community, and she really came through for that community, as you heard, during COVID. As consumers, we sometimes take for granted the necessary changes that these local smaller businesses made during the pandemic, but you have to think, it really takes a lot of strategizing, planning, discussions to make things as simple as curbside or delivery work for that business. It also takes a lot of planning, consistency, and a lot of effort to market businesses on social media. And that's a whole other monster on its own. And I've had podcast discussions, which you know, surrounding social media, but it's all a part of marketing your business and getting the word out about what you're offering to consumers. What I also found interesting and personally thought was kind of cool was the fact that she pretty much held every job you could have in the service industry. And in my opinion, that gives her a good amount of perspective, along with the experience, of course, when it comes to helping out a restaurant or a restaurant owner. She pretty much knows the whole operation side of things. And I'm sure it can help when she's offering advice to new restaurant owners themselves. If it's your first time running a restaurant or a bar, you're so busy managing your staff. And that's coming from someone who has never done that and never worked in the service industry. But I'm more than sure you're just so busy managing your staff, managing the inventory, keeping track of inventory, going through paperwork, probably helping out in the kitchen, probably helping out with serving, visiting with customers, making sure everything's going smoothly, and all the other operational duties. You probably don't have the extra time to put towards social media and how your brand is being managed and marketed out there in the public world. The work that Kim and Embark Marketing does for the service industry here in San Antonio is so important, and for that, I'm really thankful. Now, for this week's recommendation, I have Adriana, aka San Antonio Mama, giving her San Antonio recommendation. You might know her if you ever engage with the infamous Spurs Twitter community, or you might be already following her on Instagram, keeping up with her foodie posts. Anyway, here is her first ever local recommendation on SA Talk.
Hi everyone, it's Adriana over at San Antonio Mama. You can find me on Instagram. And I'm coming to you this week with SA Talk's local recommendation. Now, before I give the recommendation, I want to give a little background as to why this is the first place I'm going to recommend. So when I was a little girl, I thought one of the best things in the world was simply a refried bean taco. My grandmother would make the best refried beans on the planet. Really, her refried beans were just out of this world. I'm gonna start getting all teary-eyed thinking about my grandmother and her beans. But yes, now as an adult, I remember about 15 years ago, I went on the search for a refried bean taco that tasted just like my grandmother's. And I finally found one at El Rafa's Cafe, and they are located on 1535 Hildebrand Avenue. So the refried bean taco, I remember the very first thing I did was I did this weird thing where I smelled it. I put it up to my nose and I took a big whiff and I said, this is it. This is the taco that reminds me of my grandmother. I already want to start crying. Now I can feel the tears forming. Now they have other items on the menu that are just as delicious. And that is definitely their enchiladas and their lengua taco. Now their lengua taco, I would say too, is one of the best in San Antonio. It's hard to get a lengua taco perfectly tender and juicy, and El Rafa's does just that. Now, the last thing I'm going to recommend off their menu is definitely something that my entire family, we all order, and we also have to order an extra plate of this because it's that good, and it's their papas. Yes, everybody orders their own plate of papas, but at the same time, we have to order an extra large for the table because they're just perfectly crispy, crunchy. And after you finish eating your own papas, you want more. And so I can't deny my kids that. So I definitely have to order an extra large plate just for the table. That is it for my recommendation of this week. I hope y'all go check it out for yourself. Don't take my word for it. And have a beautiful week. Thank you. See y'all again soon.
Thank you to Adriana for the local recommendation. Make sure you follow her on Instagram and Twitter at San Antonio Mama. That's San Antonio MOMMA. If you want to leave a local recommendation, do reach out to the podcast. We'd love to hear what your favorite San Antonio spots are. But moving on to the question of the week, since we're talking about the service industry and marketing and all the trends that have come along, what trends have you seen in the service industry, the restaurant industry, that have really stuck out to you? If you want to answer on Facebook or Instagram, find the post that includes the question of the week and put your answer below. If you want to answer on Twitter, you can do the same thing or simply respond with hashtag #SAtalkAnswers. But with that said, that is going to wrap up this week's episode of SA Talk. I want to give a huge thank you to all of the repeat listeners of the podcast. It means so much to me that you all keep listening to the episodes every single week. I also want to thank any new listeners checking out the show for the first time. If you enjoyed this episode, I would encourage you to check out my other series, Searching for San Antonio. Of course, now you can subscribe to each series individually. If you want to help the podcast out, please give a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. Lastly, if you or any business owners you know are looking to advertise with a great local podcast, please reach out to me at Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, at sapodnetwork.com. Thank you all again. Have a wonderful weekend. See you again next week. And viva San Antonio.